Good morning. My name's Johnny. I lead the team here in Bognor. It's good to have you all this morning. Some faces I do know, some faces I don't know. This is a funny phrase. I don't know how to extend a welcome, but I'm extending Kim's welcome to you if you are new this morning. You are so, so welcome. I want to ask you a question. Do you know the most followed person on social media? Do you know who the most followed person on social media is? And do you know how many followers they have? No, thought not. It is this guy, it's Cristiano Ronaldo. He is the most followed person on Instagram. He has 0.3 billion followers. So let me put that into context. If you multiplied the UK five times, that would still not be enough people who follow him. That's nuts. All right, you've also got this person. This is Kim Kardashian. She's up there. She probably made the whole idea of influencers famous on social media. She's got 250 million followers, slightly less than Mr. Ronaldo. But these are influencers. This is what the world call influencers. And influencing and influencers are not a new thing. This isn't a new thing that's come around since social media. This has been around for a while. There is this guy. So this is a book by Dale Carnegie. I think that's how you pronounce his name. Carnegie, thank you. Yeah, no idea how to pronounce his name, clearly. But he wrote a book, this book here, How to Make Friends and Influence People. It sold 30 million copies. It is in Time Magazine's top 20 for the most influential books of all time. Now, this is a crazy book. And this was in 1936. And it's still there. So, but the truth is, we all want to be influential in some way, shape, or form. That might be by getting a technique on how to influence people, or to make friends, or be influential. It might be on social media. I think that's quite prominent in our culture at the moment. It might be in the field of work that we are in. It might even be in our family or even in the church. We've got those desires in us sometimes to be influential. This morning, I want to focus us in on what Jesus says in the Sermon on the Mount, where he calls Christians. If you're a Christian this morning, he calls us to different influence. He calls us to be different in influence. We are in a series as a church in the Sermon on the Mount, called Different Worship, and we're looking at how Christians are called to be different to the world around us. If you missed Joe last week, Joe kicked off our series and talked about character in our Different Worship series. Do catch up with that if you can, in any way that you can. He looked at the first 12 verses of the Sermon on the Mount, and we call those verses, in Christianese, we call it the Beatitudes. And it's where God's calling people to be different in character and different in their worship. Joe summarized it with his little song, you probably remember it. But it's to submit to God's drumbeat than to the beat of our own drum. That's what we are doing. And the rest, now from now on, in the Sermon on the Mount, what Jesus is doing after the Beatitudes section, after those first 12 verses, he's unpacking that. He's unpacking the rest. He's unpacking the Beatitudes and how that plays out in our lives, in the church, and into the world. And I think a really helpful way of picturing what the Sermon on the Mount is as a mirror. You sometimes look in a mirror and you go, oh, I look good. I look good. And then you look in a mirror and you go, oh, I've got a spot there, or oh, I need to shave, or whatever it is. Women probably don't get that so much. The second one. But it's like that. There's some stuff we look at in the Beatitudes and we go, that's so good. Oh, isn't he a loving God? Isn't he an amazing God? And there's some stuff we look in the mirror and we go, oh, that challenges me. That sort of challenges my thinking and the way I'm living and what I'm believing about God. And today in Matthew 5, we're going to be in Matthew 5, 13 to 16. I can grab that. This bit in Matthew is more of the second one. It's looking in the mirror and it's challenging us. If you're a Christian, it challenges you on how we are living our lives. And Jesus summarizes it like this: be salt and light. So we're going to turn now to Matthew 5, verse 13 to 16. If you don't have it, it's up there. I've moved from paper Bible to electronic. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. Anyway, don't know why I'm telling you that. You are the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It's no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot. You are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. So I want to give a brief overview of what these two metaphors, salt and light, mean as a general idea, and then we'll hone into each one individually. So that's sort of where we're going this morning, by thinking how do we influence as salt and light, and what does that mean for us? So if the Beatitudes that Joe was talking about last week, those first 12 verses, they describe the character of a Christian, the salt and light metaphors, well, they indicate what the influence of that good character is on the world. It's worth being aware that these metaphors are similar. Jesus is saying something similar in both of them because he's trying to hammer home a point. The basic truth behind the salt and light metaphor is that the church and the world are different. They are distinct from one another. Our influence on this world is a different influence and is distinct to the world. But what does it mean to influence as salt and light? So first of all, let's look at salt, he says. So we're going to look at salt. You are the salt of the earth, but if salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? This phrase that Jesus is saying is an odd one. It's a bit strange. It's a bit weird. He says, but if salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty? That makes no sense. That doesn't really make sense. Salt cannot lose its saltiness, or it's not salt. Salt is salt, right? It cannot not be salt if it's salt. Right? Do you get where I'm going? It seems like he doesn't make sense. What's he talking about? He's been a bit strange. Well, he's saying the salt losing its saltiness illustration is trying to point out. He's trying to point at this is who you are. If you are a Christ follower, you follow Christ. If you're a Christian, you are a Christian. It's talking about who you are. We cannot not be salt. We influence the world as salt by being who we are, by being salt. So that's the first thing. We influence as salt by being salt. And although we might not lose our saltiness, Christians don't lose their salvation, they don't lose their saltiness, it can become contaminated. Salt, when it's contaminated, it can get impurities in it, and then it loses its effectiveness. It can sometimes, when it gets contaminated, become dangerous. Sodium chloride, when it gets contaminated, does become dangerous. Christian saltiness is the Christian character found in the Beatitudes. Yeah, the committed Christian is exemplifying in word and deed what Jesus has called them to in those first 12 verses. If we lose our character, we lose our influence. If we lose our saltiness, we become trodden on the ground. We don't need it anymore. So it sort of didn't answer the question, how do I influence the salt? By being salt. But it's who we are. Yeah, we influence the salt by being who we are, but we can also do it by preserving. You are the salt of the earth, Jesus says in that passage. Salt in the ancient world had a number of purposes. It could be argued that he was talking about flavoring. It could be argued that he was talking about sacrifice or destroying your enemies after. He could have been referencing fertilizing ground or fermentation as well, slowing that process down. But predominantly in the ancient world that Jesus is talking into, it would have been a job of preserving and purifying. Think of it this way: salt was the ancient fridge. That was its job. It stopped meat from decaying. It stopped it from getting disgusting and making people ill. And that's what its job was. Followers of Jesus, Christians, in this sense, are sent into the world to keep it from decaying. They were sent into the world to preserve the goodness of God, what he planned originally from the beginning of creation, stopping it from becoming corrupt and ruined. Such a helpful thing to remember. As we go to work, what's our job? Well, our job is to be salt, it's to preserve, it's to avoid being caught into that social decay. But how do Christians help preserve the world from social decay? Well, the one thing that causes social decay is sin. So the one solution to stopping social decay is the gospel. The gospel of Jesus' death and resurrection, it's good news. It's the thing that stops the decay. It's good news for the person who is a millionaire. It's good news for the person who is sleeping on the streets. The sin of the world is what brings decay, and it is only the salt of the gospel that avoids that. So what we have got coming up is one way of, as a church, that we want to help stop the social decay of sin is by sharing the gospel through Alpha. We're going to be doing an Alpha course on the 11th of October, and I've just got a quick video that we've put together that I just want to show you about Alpha coming up in Grace Church. Oh.
Hello, I'm Kim.
I'm Joe.
I'm Katie.
I'm Dave, and we're the team that runs the Alpha course at Grace Church.
No, we're not doing Alpha online. We are going to do an Alpha course in person here at the Grace Centre this term. We've never been able to do an Alpha course here before because we kind of finished it all up and then before we got around to doing one, COVID came. So it's super exciting, an actual course in person. We're going to use the kitchen, we'll serve food, cook food here, have the tables out, and it's going to be great. We weren't initially going to do this, but since we've kind of in the last few months, just people have been increasingly asking us, do you do Alpha? I want to do it. And we thought, well, all right, we'll do it. We feel God is leading us into this. People are searching and seeking him, trying to make sense of the world in the last 18 months. So we're going to do it. It's exciting. It's not the end of Alpha Online. God really served us through lockdown, through Alpha Online. And we'll do it again someday in the future. Who knows? This course may end up online. But you've got it willing, it won't. But it's served us well. If you want to get involved, let us know. We're going to be starting it on Monday, the 11th of October. It'll be weekly on Monday evenings here. Let us know. You want to come and help cook, help serve the food, help be on a table speaking to people about the gospel. And otherwise, start telling your friends, invite people to the Alpha course here at the Grace Centre.
So yeah, we've got that coming up. You can sign up for that on the connections cards that Kim was talking about. So Joe was predominantly talking to members of Grace Church there, saying, can you help out? If you are somebody who is new to Grace Church, new to Christianity, and you're like, oh, I'd love to know a bit more, please come along. It's going to be a fantastic time. We've got some people that can cook. So it's not me, you'll be pleased to know, who is doing the food. Do come along. The gospel is what stops social decay. It's the gospel that is good news for all. So, yeah, share about Alpha, come along to Alpha. Can you help out Alpha? let us know, be there. If you are interested in Alpha, come talk to me. I'd love to chat with you. So we influence as salt by being salt, by preserving and purifying, but we also do it with bite. We do it with bite. Salt, being salt means to speak out. It means to call out the world when it's not as God intended. This isn't what God had planned. We say, like I just mentioned, the social decay of our world, of our morality. Yeah, that God's desire in Genesis and Exodus and all the way through the Bible was to have a people for himself, that he would build a nation who would bless other nations, that would go out to other nations. That was his purpose, to shine a light and to be salt in those areas. And sometimes that then caused a friction between the nations, because the Israelites were different. They were standing out. They were calling out when child sacrifice was not a good idea. That's what they were doing. Colossians 4:6 says, "Let your conversation be always full of grace, seasoned with salt, so that you may know how to answer everyone." I've got a sweet tooth. I really love sweets. I love chocolate. I love cake. I go to the gym just so I don't balloon. That's the only reason I go. I love sweet stuff. Sometimes we prefer to be salt, to be sugar rather than salt, because it's easier. It's easier to be sugar. We can say, God loves you. He cares for you. He leaves the 99 for you, which is completely true. But it's also true that God hates sin, that he is a just God, that there is the wrath of God, which at the same time is beautiful. So that's like salt. I'm not saying let's never be sugar. We should be sugar as well, but we are not called the sugar of the earth. We're called the salt of the earth. We are salt, not sugar. And although salt has some bite to start with, actually it brings something good. It brings good flavor. It brings something different by the end. You think salt in a wound is painful. You put salt in there, oh, it really hurts. Ah, there's salt in it. But at the same time, what it's doing is it's cleaning it out. It's clearing it out. I think there's a reason that Matthew puts verses 11 and 12 before this. He says in verse 11 and 12, "Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven, for in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you." He put that there because the idea that Christians are just relevant, that we need to be relevant, that we need to be cool and we need to fit in with society, that's a new thing. That's not the story of Christians. It's not the story of the church. It's not the story of the Bible. Christians have been arrested. Christians have been killed, fed to lions, sawed in two, boiled alive, crucified upside down, put in prison, have been looted and robbed from their houses. And that's just from Scripture. That's not even taking into account the rest of the history of the church. That you and I will be cool enough and relevant enough to influence people into the church is utter rubbish. Yeah, that's just sugar. We're not called to be sugar, we're called to be salt. We influence this world as salt that preserves and stops the rot of injustice with a little bit of bite. We can't forget Colossians, we are full of grace. There's grace in our message. There's grace in everything that we do and everything that we say, but we are seasoned with salt. We still have bite. We speak out against injustice. Just chuck that down there. I think Martin Lloyd-Jones says it better than I do. The glory of the gospel is that when the church is absolutely different from the world, she attracts it. It is then that the world is made to listen to her message, though it may hate us at first. Otherwise, if we Christians are indistinguishable from non-Christians, we are useless. We might as well be discarded like saltless salt, thrown and trodden underfoot. We influence as salt by being salt, by preserving, and with bite. We're not sugar. We are salt. But also we can influence as light. In verse 14, Jesus shifts his metaphor. He's now not talking about salt. He's talking about light. But that the theme of it is still the same, of being different. What did Jesus mean by light? He is referring to how we behave, referring to what we're doing. Verse 16, in the same way, let your light shine before others that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. Good deeds or good works is the general expression to cover what a Christian says and what a Christian does because they are a Christian. It's the outward and visible display of their Christian faith. It refers to what we are and what we do. A town on a hill can't be hidden, it said. We are to be seen. A people of light cannot help but be different because we are visible. John Stott explains it, these good deeds, this way. For they will inevitably recognize that it is by the grace of God that we are what we are, and that our light is his life, and our works are his works, done in us and through us, so that the light they will praise. So it is the light they will praise, not to the lamp which bears it. We are different to this world because we influence with light by reflecting and illuminating the light source. When we influence as light, it is the attractiveness and the beauty of God that is seen, not our good deeds, not our good works. We so often think, I'm like the sun. I'm the sun. I shine and give the light. Utter rubbish. We're not the sun. He is. We're the moon. All we do is we illuminate. We are illuminated by the sun. And then what that does is then it reflects the light of Jesus into the world. We just reflect Jesus, the true light. We receive a blessing from God, and then we bless the world. That's the call of Christians. Our good deeds reflect and illuminate God and not ourselves. The influence we bring to the world illuminates Jesus. If he's not getting the glory, then somewhere things are going wrong. But how do we illuminate Jesus? Well, we influence with light by being attractive. I don't mean good looking. That's not what I'm not meaning that. We often think that if we behave different like Jesus, that's just weird, right? We're just weirdos that people will look at. But strangely, it's attractive. It flips it on its head. Jesus flips it on his head. We are attractive. My daughter Zipporah, she is a bug expert. Well, the expert's probably extreme, but she loves bugs, all right? She goes out into the garden in this weather and will just have a little pot and try and find a load of bugs and put these bugs in it. It's disgusting. But she loves it. She stopped the other day in the middle of a path and was just watching this bug go across this path. It's first of all embarrassing as a parent, but also really time consuming. It takes ages for this thing to go. If I said to her, oh wait till night time. Wait till I can, when the light is dark. What I'll do is I'll open the door and I'll turn the light on. When I turn the light on, what happens is they're attracted. They come in, they draw to the light. They draw in to where the light is. That's what we're to do. That's what we are. Gandhi was asked, Mahatma Gandhi was asked if why he taught on stuff from the Sermon on the Mount. He taught from the Sermon on the Mount, and he said that he loves Christ. I love his teaching. It's just that so many Christians are so unlike Christ. If Christians would really live according to the teachings of Christ, as found in the Bible, all of India would be Christian today. He wasn't put off by Jesus. People are not completely put off by Jesus. They're put off by Christians. What light are we shining? Jesus, he had a following. People followed him. He's in this moment here, this Sermon on the Mount, he's speaking to people. People have come to listen to him. He would have followers on Instagram. All right? He would have followers on Instagram. He was different, and he attracted people. When Jesus is at the core of who we are and what we do, the attractiveness of the gospel is seen. Romans 12:10 says, "Love one another with brotherly affection. Outdo one another in showing honor." That's what Jesus did. Jesus outdid everybody in showing honor. He honored all. He was approachable by all. He brought the poor and the lowly to him. He loved them and cared for them. He built people up when they were around him. We see it time and again at the woman at the well. We see it with the tax collectors. We see it all the time. What if a challenge to us as a church, I say this to myself, I say it to all of us, what if we were a Romans 12:10 church? That we loved one another with brotherly affection and we only competed in showing honor. That's the place where we competed most than anywhere else. What if you called somebody up every day, Christian or not Christian, and you just built them up? You just said, "I think you're fab. I think you're great. I'm really blessed by this thing that you do." Just really built them up. What if, all right, here's another one. What if you phoned somebody up and you gossiped about them, but it was positive gossip? You don't go, "Oh, I'm so annoyed that Johnny was spoke for ages today." But you actually were gossiping about someone, saying positive things. "But I love how they care for their kids. I love how they build this person up. I love how they cared for that." And you're just positively gossiping. You know what happens? It builds us up. But that's not the reason we do it. We do it because then it shines a light. It shines the light. And it's attractive to the world. It doesn't exude this smugness. "Oh, look at us. Look at us. We're so kind. We're so loving." It thinks about others rather than ourselves. It meets what the world is calling out for. I don't know anybody that has said, "Oh, I'm so annoyed. I'm so encouraged. I feel so encouraged right now." I don't know anyone who's ever said, "Oh, I feel too welcomed." "Really, really kind. Oh, really out-kinded me." Oh, no one does that. If the world saw us building up each other like that, they would be attracted. They would be drawn in. We need to do it. It needs to be a natural thing. Not a weird thing. Don't make it weird, right? But a natural thing. Just, I don't know. Rachel and Stefan, I just love how you get your kids so involved in what you do, and how you are as parents just really, really encourages me. And Simon and Quint, I'm just looking over here, that's all. You just hard workers. I love it. It just encourages, it makes me want to work harder. I just love it. Oh, it's natural. It's not weird. Don't make it weird. I won't pick on anyone anymore because the second they were like, "No, please don't speak to me." They get embarrassed. But you get the idea. We make it a natural thing in our church. What is not going to attract people? How is that not going to attract people? It's not about relevance. It's about reverence. We're in reverence of God. We shine the light of Jesus. That is the type of church we need to be. It isn't weird and it isn't hard. We think, "Oh, it's so hard to do." No, it's not. It's just being nice. Just being nice to them. That's all I'm doing. And really, in our culture now, that looks different. When we're nice, just nice people, it just looks different. Christ-like influence is a beautiful light, and it draws people to the beauty of Jesus above anything else. So as I finish, if Steve and Alice coming up, as I finish, at the start, I mentioned about influencers and their many, many followers. Jesus calls us to be salt and light influencers. We influence as salt and light. And that just means Christ followers who are different to the world around. Not in a weird way, right? Who stand up for injustice, who speak with bite, but also season. So we season our conversation with salt, but we're full of grace. We attract people by pointing everyone to the beauty of him. We do not influence as light and salt because God will love us more. That's not why we do it. To be honest, I am not always salt, and I am not always light. You can ask my children, and you can ask my wife. I am not always like that. And it's so good that it is not about God loving us more. We get it wrong. We fall short. We influence as salt and standing up for injustice because Jesus died on the cross so that the injustice in this world was dealt with once and for all when he nailed it to him. And we influence as light by illuminating the attractiveness and beauty of that moment, of the gospel, which it points people's gaze. It says, no, don't look there, look there. It gets them to turn their head and see what is to come. When there will be no social decay, when there'll be no sin, when there'll be no sickness, that's where God is pointing us to. That's why we are a light. We're not a light for this world. We're not a light in this place. We are a light because it points to something to come. It points to eternity when we'll be with Jesus forever and ever. Revelation 21, 23. The city does not need the sun or the moon to shine on it. For the glory of God gives it light, and the Lamb is its lamp. Jesus, the Lamb, it's its lamp. The nations will walk by its light, and the kings of the earth will bring their splendor to it. On no day will its gates ever be shut, for there will be no night there. The glory and honor of the nations will be brought into it. Nothing impure will ever enter it and bring decay, being different in influence, points this world to the one to come because Jesus came into the light, came as light into this world, and he is the salt for all. He stops the decay of sin. He brings light into the darkness. Do you want to stand up for me? We're gonna worship this God. We're going to worship Jesus. We're going to lift up his name. But before we do, I want to read something to you. I just think this is stunningly written, first of all, but it just helps us to see what Jesus has done. It's the thing that stirs us and makes us go, no, I want to be salt, I want to be light. This is the catalyst to get us going. We can be salt and light because we can remember that night Jesus was betrayed. He was died and suffered for us. We are light because he is light. And this was written by Andrew Wilson. It's just beautiful about the light that we are. The reason we are light is because he is the light that came. The moment Judas leaves, so this is the night Jesus is portrayed in the Last Supper. The moment Judas leaves, we get one of the darkest lines in the gospel, which was after receiving the bread, it was night. After receiving Jesus' body, it was night. Which means that when we hear the howl of desolation from the cross, my God, why have you forsaken me? And see the sky that is turned to black at midday for 3 hours, we understand and we recognize that the cosmic horror of what is happening as all our darkness, all our perversion, all our decay and nightmares, our secrets and lies crowd upon the light of the world like a demonic horde until 3 p.m. With a final cry, the light goes out. No night is bleaker than the night of death. No place on earth is darker than a cave with a stone rolled across its entrance. This is the glorious bit. But it also means that when we see a group of women walking east in the gloom of a Sunday morning, and then the sun beginning to emerge behind the horizon, waking the birds and casting a faint yellowish glow across the scrubland, we can make a guess as to what will happen next. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. God, I thank you. I thank you that you were the light. You were the salt. You stopped the rot. You stopped the decay. You are the catalyst to fight injustice in the world. And it was nailed to your cross the night that the light went out. You did that so that we could be light, that we could have eternity with you, that we could be in your presence forever and ever. Lord, as we leave this morning, as we go out into this world, will we be light and salt? Not because we have to, not because we need you to love us more, because all we're doing is illuminating Jesus. We're illuminating your cross. We're illuminating what you did. Speak to us now, God. I just feel that there are people this morning who feel that they are in a place where they are struggling to feel like they can be salt and struggling to feel like they can be light. They feel, I've fallen short. I'm struggling to be light. I just feel like God wants to encourage you this morning. He wants to let you know that we can pick ourselves up. I've got grace for that. I'm full of grace, and I'm seasoned with salt, but I'm full of grace. He's so full of grace this morning. I just feel that God wants to minister to those people who just feel let him down again. I was more sugar in that moment than salt. Like their light is like a flickering flame. It feels like it's nothing. God just wants to encourage you this morning. We can do this. It's not about putting our bootstraps up. It's about relying on him. It's about knowing that he is good enough when we are not. It's knowing that his grace is sufficient when we are not. So we're going to worship that God. We're going to enjoy him. We're going to sing to him this morning. And then Kim will hand over to Kim. She'll lead us through the rest of the morning. But if that's you, just use this song as a prayer. Use it as a time to fix on him and enjoy him and speak to him and pray to him.